Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here this week and spend some time with you. We have a phenomenal guest on today, Kevin Lum, who's been on several times before, and he is always in the thick of the knowledge of what's going on in our financial markets. In these days and times, boy, we need help, we need guidance, we need advice. It's just crazy times that we're in right now. And fear is the one thing we don't need, which I think I'm seeing tons of it out there with everybody, fear and anxiety. And our hearts and prayers go out to the people of Ukraine and everything happening. It's just COVID still going on and so many things, and we just want to offer peace and take this next hour and give you some guidance, but also peace. Kevin is a financial planner and investment advisor. He's amazing. He focuses on what you call impact investing, socially responsible investing, values-based planning, currently leading Foundry Financial with offices in Los Angeles and D.C. Foundry Financial wants to help you do well and do good through value-based financial planning and impact investing. And now this is such an important time. All times are important, but right now, after getting over the shock of coronavirus, now Ukraine, our global markets, how we're so interconnected, it's so important to be able to stay strong, calm, and have someone help you lead the way while definitely staying safe. Kevin's passion is helping people identify their dreams and then develop a financial plan and investment strategy that aligns with their values, whether it's planning an early retirement, having a first child, starting a new business. He helps you chart out your course from where you are now to where you want to be. And he's great at knowing what to do, because it's so hard to know what to do these days. Is our money safe? Where should we put it? Stocks and bonds. Do we invest in gold? What do we do? You know, and Kevin is great at figuring that out and giving you a plan that guides you. We're not giving legal or financial advice, just because we're not allowed, right? And it's important that you check with your attorney or experts before making a plan. Without further ado, I want to welcome Kevin. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on again. I always love to be on your show and to talk money and the future and not being afraid.
I love it. I love it. You're so great, and your advice is always so right on. So I just want to thank you, too, for taking the time. I know you're slammed right now, especially with everything happening. So, I'm just going to let you open it up to you. With this, you know, there's so much going on right now. We have, of course, our news, our media, our social media. We get so much information, and when it comes to the war and other things, of course, it always amazes me how, as the public, we get this information, but we don't have top security clearance, and we can't know everything that's going on, otherwise the enemy does, right? So it's like it's a really turbulent time right now. What's your take on everything?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my heart goes out to the people of Ukraine and just so many people who've been impacted, their lives have been disrupted by everything that's going on. I think it's interesting that, you know, our lives are more interconnected to Ukraine than we really realize. I kind of realized, you know, in the past few weeks, like how many firms that I work with have staff that are located in Ukraine. And so it's what seemed to be a world away, you realize is actually not that dissimilar. And so, I really I've been paying close attention just because I feel very connected to what's happening.
Yeah.
But I honestly think that every time I come on, I sound a bit like a broken record because,
no, you don't.
Well, I think the reason I say that is I am a broken record when I'm talking with my clients and about where people should be. And the word is always don't be afraid, right? The best
yeah.
time to be invested and to continue investing is when other people are fearful and when there's kind of chaos in the world. Because when there's fear and chaos, things begin to act irrationally, and irrationality and volatility when it comes to the market are your friend. And the worst thing you can do is kind of get scared and freak out and sell or get worried about what's going to happen in the future. You know, but I tell clients, I don't know what's going to happen 1 year or 2 years or 3 years from now. But if you pull back and you look at a long-term perspective, you begin to get a better picture of what's actually going to happen and what you can expect in your return. And so if you don't get caught up in the noise, right, there's all this noise. We are bombarded
sure.
by opinions and by noise and by fear and all these different voices, whether it's on social media or on the news. And, you know, they thrive on, they make money on keeping us glued to their platforms or to their channel.
True.
And the way you do that is activating fear, right? So CNBC has the, you know, these loud, you know, music, very ominous sounding, and
yes.
something on the bottom of the screen, you know, chaos in the financial markets, you know, will you be okay? And I had my first client call this week or last week, I guess, into last week and say, sell everything. You know, the world is coming to an end. And I wrote a note to my client. And I told them, I kind of gave them this, that when I wrote the note, we had just entered into correction territory on the S&P 500. And a correction is any time the market is down by 10% or more from recent highs. And then a bear market is whenever we're down by 20% or more from recent highs. And what I told my clients is that since I've been on this earth, which is, I don't know, 41 years now, The market has entered into a correction or a bear market territory, so a drawdown of at least 10% and sometimes 20%+. That's happened 35 times in 41 years.
That's all?
And but that's almost, that's quite a few times. That's almost once a year, right? So happens way more. So in 40 years, it's happened 35 times. But here's what's interesting. Within 1 year, 90% of the time, within 1 year of a big drawdown, the market is back up, and it is back up on average 25 percentage points. And so, when you are most afraid, that is the time to actually, I'm most bullish and say, you know, it's probably a good time to keep buying and keep investing.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense.
So that's my spiel. I just keep I have that on repeat. I've had that conversation about 100 times. You know, just telling people like it's going to be okay. But you have to be willing to sit through the volatility. And you know, I talk a lot about the agony of high returns or the pain of high returns. You know, because to get the outsized returns in the market means you have to have a portfolio that takes on more risk. Which means in times of volatility, you are going to feel more pain in your portfolio, meaning you're going to be down by more than a more balanced portfolio. But that's also the portfolio that if you're willing to have a long-term perspective, can do quite well. One of the portfolios that we use for clients is a small cap value portfolio. It's very volatile. But we were able to back test it to 1970 and had to put $10,000 in this one very volatile, very aggressive portfolio. Had you put $10,000 in 1970 into this portfolio, you would have $9 million today.
You're kidding.
But to get to that $9 million, you know, you would have had some serious drawdowns. Because let's say, you know, that portfolio has grown to $4 million and then you have a 40% drawdown in a year. Losing $10,000 doesn't feel too bad, but now that you've got $10,000 is $4 million and it's down by 40%, Now we're talking real money. That you feel, but you forget. Wait, I just started with $10,000, and so you just have to have that long-term perspective. Now, if you're going to retire next year or 5 years from now, then you want to begin to adjust your portfolio to a more conservative stance. But if you've got a long time horizon, take risks. And if the past plays out, when you look at the past, the markets by and large tend to go up more than they go down.
So do you have somebody usually, if they took $10,000 and it got up to $4 million, then there's a 40% drop, do a lot of people get scared and sell at that point and go, oh, boy, I better just take what I have? Or are you able to keep them in?
I mean, I do everything I can to keep my clients in. There's an interesting study. Vanguard did a research project, and they found out that people who work as a financial advisor have a 3% better return per year after subtracting the advisor's fee than people that don't have an advisor. But when you dig down into the research, most of that return, that alpha, as we call it, most of the alpha comes from the advisor's behavioral coaching. So essentially, most of the better returns come simply because you have someone that can walk you through the historic data and say, look, this is what happened in World War II when we had a conflict. This is what happened when we had the Great Depression, or whatever it might be. And someone to say, you know what, it's okay. Let's just leave the money on the table. Or to say,
right,
you know what, you're going to retire in a year. You need $1 million in an account that's safe. You don't need all $4 million, but we're going to take $1 million. We're going to put it into a safe account or a much less aggressive account, but we're going to leave $3 million invested because you don't need that money now, and hopefully you can use that to leave a legacy for your family. And so that's where you begin to just have perspective and think, how much do I actually need? How much risk can I take? And so sometimes if you're about ready to retire, we're going to put some of that $4 million into a safer investment, but the rest of it, we're just going to let the market do what the market does, and the chances are that, by the time that money passes on to your family someday, they'll have a very significant amount of money that they're able to utilize.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's. Do you mix what about stocks that pay dividends or other things? I mean, it's just a lot of mutual funds. I mean, are you pretty much give your contact information. I want to do that first too. And then we also as if they email or contact us.
Yeah, you can find me at foundryfinancial.org, FOUNDRY, foundryfinancial.org, or you can find me on Twitter at just Kevin, at Kevin Lum. It depends, right? So if you are, I have clients who are in retirement that need income, and so we'll create an income portfolio for them. So a portfolio that's focused on dividend stocks, things that are creating a yield. And for some clients, we have them in mutual funds. Other clients, we have them in ETFs. Some clients are in individual holdings. It really just kind of depends on their time horizon and their risk what their individual goals are. So we do all, it just depends. It's very person by person. We have kind of overarching model portfolios that we put most people in. And then, each individual basis, we might tweak that for your situation. And as you move closer towards retirement, we start dialing back the risk that's in your portfolio, or at least part of your portfolio.
What about cryptocurrency?
So I am one of the first financial advisors in the country to have a certificate in digital assets for financial advisors. So, I follow it quite closely. I watch it. And what I tell clients is I'm not against Bitcoin and Ethereum. I think having 1-3% of your assets in those in one of those products is not a terrible idea. I think that is a risk that I would be okay with someone taking, but I don't really know what's going to happen in the short term. As you've seen, Bitcoin was supposed to be a hedge against inflation, but we're in the worst inflationary period probably of my lifetime right now.
Right.
And Bitcoin is down significantly from its highs. It peaked at, what, 68,000, and today it's at 42,000, or I honestly don't know what the exact numbers are today. But I think if you look towards the long term, I think it makes sense to have it as part of your asset class mix.
And if people now they have to pay taxes on it when they sell it, but I guess they could like play with it when it goes up and down and buy and sell, right? But then somebody has to really be watching it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, right now there is a tax loophole for people who own cryptocurrency that may get closed. But if you have stock and you sell your stock and then buy it right back, let's say you bought Apple. You bought $1 million in Apple. It started falling. You got scared. You've lost $200,000, and so you sell the stock. Well, now you have a $200,000 loss that you can put on your tax return. But
okay.
Then the next day you feel stupid, and you say, you know what? I shouldn't have sold Apple. I think I'm going to buy it back. Right? I think I'm going to buy it back. Well, when you buy it back before 30-day period is up, you can no longer take that $200,000 loss. Even if Apple keeps going down, right, you buy it and it just keeps falling, you can't take that initial loss that you made. It's called it's the wash rule. So, but in cryptocurrency, wash rules don't apply. So let's say you have Bitcoin. Bitcoin, you know, it's gonna fluctuate. You buy it at 50,000, it drops to 25. You're not concerned. You know it's going back up. But when it drops to 25, you can sell your Bitcoin.
Buy more. Okay.
Book the $25,000 loss, and now you have $25,000 of losses for your taxes that year. And then the next second, literally, you sell it 1 second. The next second later, you rebuy it back. And there's no wash rule. So then, you know, someday the Bitcoin back up. So it's one of the few asset classes that's tradable that doesn't have a wash rule. So
they still have to report it that year, right? You still have to report it, but you not have to. That's great.
You report a loss because you bought it at 50, you sold it at 25, so you're able to take 25,000 in capital gain. Offset some capital gains on your return.
What about your gains? If you have a gain in it and you sell it, you have to report that. But
you can
do what you want
gain.
With it.
Yeah, but you have to report the gain. But in this scenario, you have a loss, and the gain could be 10 years from now, and so you don't have to report the gain until far into the future.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. And then any other stocks that you're saying, if you like you did Apple and you sold it and you felt like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have done it, you buy it before the 30-day period. So you can buy it the 31st day, but not within 30 days.
Exactly. Yeah. There's like you have to wait. There's like a holding period. It's around 30 days.
I
always tell people to be careful. Like give it a couple extra days just so you don't hit it wrong and like make a miscalculation. But yeah, you have 30 days. But what a lot of people don't know is that wash rule goes 30 days. Prior and 30 days after. So if you bought, you know, $250,000 in Apple one day, 15 days later you buy $250,000, and then you sell and you go to take a loss. If you bought any stock or options 30 days prior or do it any transactions 30 days after, then that wash rule can kick in. So you just have to be very careful on that. Now there's something called tax loss harvesting. Financial advisors are able to help you say, okay, you want to sell Apple, but you still want exposure to that kind of area of technology. Maybe we'll buy, you know, Microsoft, because that won't create a wash rule because it's a separate company. Or let's say you sell the S&P 500. Let's say you sell the index, the S&P 500, like the ETF, the SPY. You might be able to buy Vanguard's large cap mutual fund because it's different enough. So you're able to still have exposure to the market, but go ahead and take the loss on this year's tax return.
Oh, that's interesting.
But it starts getting a bit complicated.
This is what you talked
about. At this point, you probably want to talk to a financial advisor and make sure you're doing it all right because there's a lot of –
like you. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, there's a lot to know, what to do, what not to do. And then in stocks, so there's that fractional ownership. You're able to buy fractionals, but not with every single stock or not with every with everybody. How does that work?
So fractional shares are going to depend on your custodian, right? So I have two custodians I use. I use one called Altruist and the other one's TD Ameritrade. On TD Ameritrade, I cannot do fractional shares. On Altruist, I can do fractional shares. So I tend to put clients with smaller accounts that want to just do little bite-sized buys. I tend to put them on Altruist, and then larger clients will go on TD Ameritrade.
Oh, that makes sense. Or what about splitting it up between their accounts? They can do that, right?
Oh, yeah, you can split it up. So, and I do that as well. Like, I have one client, he has a big 401k, a solo 401k that I put in TD Ameritrade, but he has a small account that he wants to do more fractional buys, maybe just buy a little bit of Berkshire Hathaway and a little bit of Amazon. So you can't, like, buy a whole share, so we can, or we'll do that on the other platform.
That's so amazing. It's so incredible that watching it all, isn't it? People just
it really is.
It really is. I can't believe Microsoft was like down to $20 a share not that long ago, a few years back, four or five years back.
I know.
It's like, wow. You know, who knows, right?
If you run the number, there's all these, you'll read these articles that will tell you things like, you know, if you'd invested in Amazon in 2000 or 1999, if you'd put $1,000 into Amazon, you'd have $1 million today or whatever it might be. You know, you hear these insane numbers. And you feel dumb for not doing
right.
That. But what they fail to mention often is that to get to from the 1,000 to the million plus, you would have had a 90% drawdown in that period. So if you put $1,000 in, that means you would have lost $900. So there would have been a point that $1,000 investment would have been worth $100. And the person that's willing to hold that and say, you know what, I just lost $90 or $900, but I'm going to hold it, right? It takes a special, like, conviction. And so that's always the challenge, like, getting to those, yeah, you know, Microsoft is down, you know, $20, but knowing then, back then, to say, you know what, I'm going to buy it, and I'm okay with these ups and downs.
Right,
that's where,
right.
When we have hindsight, we can look and say, oh, this is what the market has done. Then we're like, oh, we should have bought. But when you're in the moment and you buy it,
that makes so much sense.
Or, yeah, yeah. So anyway, so
that's why it really
it's easy
does
to look
because
that.
You hear these stories about all that, and it's like you're right though, but they don't tell you about when it's going up and down, and it looked like people, you know, yeah, decided to bail on it because they weren't sure. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And then they have these stock splits a lot of times, right? You don't. It's hard to say. So you know what's happening because you're in the thick of it all the time.
We'll have some breaking news on your show. Just within the past few minutes, Amazon announced that they're going to have a stock split. And when they announced it, the stock surged by 10% after hours because, you know, Amazon stock had gotten to $3,000 a share. So, you know, the average person can't buy too many shares, so they just had a stock split. And that actually sent the stock surging, not because anything changed in the company, but just because more people can now buy into the company because the shares are less expensive.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. So you were saying Altruist. What about Robinhood? Is that something? That's something. It seems like a lot of people went on to Robinhood to get into fractionals from there. A lot of people went into different. It's hard to know. It's just when you're a layperson and not sure.
So Altruist is just for financial advisors to use. Robinhood is, you know, is a retail app. So if you want to buy and sell your own stocks, it's kind of gamified the stock trading game. So, you know,
but
when you buy fractional.
You should do fractionals on there, right? Because Ameritrade can't do fractionals.
You can buy fractional on there. You can buy fractional there. You can actually do fractionals at Charles Schwab, which just bought Ameritrade. Yeah, I think it'll be on both platforms before long. But you
eventually.
Can do fractionals at Charles Schwab. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. It's so interesting. It's mind-boggling, right? Because they always say don't put all your eggs in one basket. So you look at real estate, look at stocks, look at bonds. What do you think about bonds?
I am not bullish on bonds right now because bonds move inverse to interest rates. So as interest rates go up, right, so right now we're in a period where the Fed's going to begin to raise interest rates. As interest rates go up, the prices of bonds go down. And so,
okay.
You know, I, as a general rule, try to – and the most rate-sensitive bonds are longer – the longer term you go out, the more sensitive to rates they become, a rate change they become. So right now, I tend to put clients in shorter-term bonds, or at sometimes they just leave their money in cash. Right? So if I'm trying to balance out a portfolio and take some risk off the table, I'll just leave it in cash. And people sometimes are like, wait, why is my money in cash? And then I'll show them, you know, bonds, the bond fund that I would typically put them in has fallen by 2 to 3% over the past few months. But long-term bonds are a good balance for your portfolio.
Even with the huge trillions of dollars of debt in the U.S., it's still safe to buy U.S. bonds? I'm being a layperson asking that question, so I may be totally off base asking that question.
A lot of people a lot smarter than me have these arguments. There are some really good arguments to say at the end of the day, of the national debt isn't as concerning as it seems, right? It is a concern, but the U.S., you know, government bonds are still by far the absolute safest place to put your money. If they begin to default, we have a lot bigger problems. I'm not overly concerned.
Oh, okay.
They will figure out a way to, there is no concern right now. Now, 20 years from now, 25 years from now, 30 years from now, could be a different story. But in the short term, I still think the safest place you can put your money is in government bonds. Now, I don't necessarily think that's the best place to put your money, but it is, like, I feel very confident that the federal government will continue to meet their obligations.
Mm.
Now, will they raise taxes? Will they cut entitlement programs? Will they, you know, will Social Security stay there? Now, those are all different conversations. And that I'm not as certain on, but I feel very confident that government bonds.
That's really good to know, because I just kind of assumed, you know, that maybe that makes sense. It's really good to know. It's hard to know what to do with. And now, what's your take? This is I guess we've been threatened with cybersecurity, et cetera. I know what Ted Koppel wrote the book years ago, Lights Out, stating that it's not a matter of if, like, our technology or everything's going to go out. It's a matter of when, because how strong and safe is the security? Because so many hackers can get into everything. What's your take on that kind of? Like, it's just with the banks and monies. Like, are our monies really safe in the market? It's like in Ameritrade, for example, or in these banks, or Bank of America. Are monies really safe? Is there? I know with banks we have the FDIC $250,000, but that you could stand in line a long time to get that, right? So is that what's your feeling on that without having a lot of fear?
I always love how well-read you are. You pull from a lot of different places. You ask such great questions. I like well-rounded people who know a lot of things.
Everything, but I'm asking questions because I'm always asking questions. That's all. But I'm probably missing a lot because I don't want to watch a lot of the news anymore.
I got an email from the regulators, from the financial regulators in the state of California this week, and their email was about this exactly. They said, you need to make sure that your platforms are extra secure. Make sure you've done, you know, have two-step authentication, doing all the different things that you need to do to protect your client's information. As a general rule, I'm not concerned about the big banks and big
platforms. Because they
have so
much. I mean, they're
like
spending a ton of money, I'm sure. Well, they're spending a ton, I'm sure, making sure it's safe,
A ton. Now, does that mean that we won't have a random, you know, breach here and there? That's very possible. But they, you know, cybersecurity is the utmost concern, and it's really a top of mind. I mean, I'd be a lot more concerned if you had about your money in a cryptocurrency platform right now than I am at Banks of America.
No, I agree. I think it is much. I don't think it's as safe in a cryptocurrency, especially in some of the wallet. I mean, I just don't. Yeah, I do. I agree. I think that. So I'm going to ask you, I'm asking a lot of questions today, aren't I? I'm sorry.
No, these are great questions. But I was just going to say the follow-up to your general, like, so in regards to your money's safe. I'm not even a little bit concerned about that. But where I am, I would tell people, you probably want to have a little bit of liquid assets, because even though your money is safe, that doesn't mean there's not going to be a period of disruption where you have a hard time accessing your money. Because a cybersecurity attack is a real threat. And, you know, there are very smart people on both sides of it. And so you want to think through, like, am I prepared in the event that I can't pull cash out of my bank for a couple weeks or that, you know, the credit card networks aren't working? I mean, look what's happening in Russia right now. So if you're a Russian citizen, your life has been turned upside down because, you know, the Swiss banking networks have been turned off, you know, Visa, MasterCard, Apple, all these things that you used to be able to count on, you wake up one day and they don't work. And you're just an average Russian citizen. You have nothing to do with kind of the geopolitical issues. You're just living in Moscow, working your 9-to-5, and then all of a sudden you wake up and you can't access, you know, a lot of the financial platforms you could before. You know, that's the type of thing where you want to make sure you have some liquid assets.
Some cash on hand.
Yeah, whatever. For long-term, is your money safe? Completely, absolutely. I don't even have, like, I wouldn't hesitate to say that. But you could have short-term disruptions. Could power grids go down for a while? Sure. Could the internet go down for a while? Absolutely. And so just making sure you have redundancies in your life. Make sure you have what's stored online. You have backup copies offline if it's really important, right, whatever that might be. And then little things, you know, just protecting your own life online. If you can have two-factor authentication, turn it on. Use a really secure password manager. Make sure you have longer passwords that are I read an article the other day that if you have a password that's like uppercase and lowercase characters that's 18 characters long, it would take a billion-plus years to use brute force to hack your password. Whereas just 18 uppercase, lowercase characters, it would be very hard. So have it, but you can't keep track of a password like that. I use a password manager called 1Pass on my Mac, and it is super secure, and I'm able to have incredibly difficult passwords. It's actually about the length more than the difficulty. So you can even have a phrase. One of the things I do is I use a phrase, uppercase, lowercase, and it could be, you know, you could have a phrase like the sun shines bright in the sky. Well, you can remember that, but that's actually a fairly long phrase. And the longer the character count, the harder it is to hack. So make sure you have secure passwords, and then make sure you can turn on two-factor authentication.
That's a good idea.
You know, I'm not as much concerned about overarching breaches. But there can be one-off breaches. And one other thing, and I'll let you ask your next question, but I think that cybersecurity is an important topic.
No, go ahead. This is great. This is such an important topic.
I'm less concerned about a hack even to your account or a hack to, you know, Bank of America than I am about people being scammed. So I have a close
That's
friend
a good
here,
point.
He has a family member who is very smart lawyer, and you know, they worked in the government their whole life. They have family that work at the FBI. This is a well-connected person that knows about the financial institutions, right? Well, they're working on their computer one day, and something pops up and says, your computer's been compromised. Call Microsoft at 1-800-MICROSOFT.
Oh, no, and it was all
It was all a scam, and then they convinced her to said, your bank account has been hacked. You need to put your money into cryptocurrency.
No.
We have a special account for you to put it into, so
you're
be safe. And it all seemed so legitimate. They had another number for her bank for her to call. They said, thank you for calling Chase Bank. We'll get this taken care of for you. And she lost a fortune.
Oh no!
That's also the reason you want to have, particularly the age, you need to have a financial advisor, and your financial advisor needs to have on file, this is something new that companies are doing, you want to have on file a trusted contact, because when you call me one day and say, hey, I need to take out everything, I've got to put in this new account, I can call your son or your daughter or, you know, whoever it is that you trust, your next door neighbor, and say, hey, you know, I don't know if you know this, but so-and-so is trying to pull out all their money to send it to this other account.
That's
you might
smart,
want to check in on them and make sure they're okay.
That's such a good point because you're right. The scammers are so strong.
That's your real threat, right? At the end of the day, the other things, there's, you know, it could be a black swan, you know, some event, but that's not my real concern. My real concern is the individual person getting scammed or getting hacked.
That's a great point, especially the elderly, you know. They're constantly doing things to the elderly where they've gone in and they said, this one's hurt or your grandson's hurt and let me go here up you here, and it's just insane.
Yeah.
You know,
You
know, my mom has dementia, Alzheimer's, and I have full, you know, I'm the power of attorney and everything. There's no way she could handle any of that right now. You know, no way. She has a cell phone, so if somebody would call, they could easily say, you know, but that is a good point. Yeah, we're in such weird times, I'll tell you. We don't know how much to have on hand with anything and everything. But I guess backups are so important. Backups are so important, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I mean, I've been into getting a I've even looked into for my house getting like a Tesla battery back. So, you know, if we had power grids were attacked or whatever, we'd have some. We could do some of the basic things: turn our laptops on, power up a few things in our house for a while things are getting under control. It's just about being able to last for a few weeks. Kind of my thing.
I got a whole house generator. I put gas into one of my houses, and I have a whole house generator hooked up. And it was funny because about 3-4 years, I'm asking the gas company, well, if the gas isn't coming in, we're not going to be able to use the generator, right? And I said, kind of thing? And they were laughing at me. Like, the person literally was laughing and saying, oh, come, that is never going to happen now. That is just not going to. Come on, that's ridiculous. I said, well, no, I'm not being paranoid. I just like to look at worst-case scenarios. And I said, what's really powering the gas? Because it's piped in. And they said, the huge, huge generators. They said it would have to be major. So I don't know. But, It's worth it. So the Tesla one you got, is that working? That's worth the lithium batteries? Is that why? Is that what it is probably?
Yeah, it's a massive like battery that gets mounted to the side of your house, and that can store, you know, if you do one battery, you can run, you know, basic things in your house. If you have two batteries, I wouldn't get two. They're expensive. But if you have two, you can run your air conditioning and pretend like life is normal for quite some time.
Because I have the whole house generator that can run all of that, run everything. It's a big one,
yep,
and it can run all of that. But it's the gas. You know what I mean? The gas that gets piped in.
Yeah.
From the it's a gas powered one. So who knows, right? We never know. It's but it is nice to have some comfort.
You just do your best and not worry about it.
But so the money part. Oh gosh, you're so good at this. Though you're so good at knowing what's going to go and what's not going to go because I have to tell you, I kind of thought like in October, November, historically, being in real estate since 85, I would always notice like in October, that's when the market seemed to go down, right? Yeah, I mean, but just kind of looking at it, you know? And with everything that was going on, it was like, I don't know, maybe it's better just kind of pull out and stay, wait a while, who knows? But you're right, it's not the smartest thing to do is to pull out. And the cryptocurrencies. Oh, I want to ask you about this because I know you've heard of this. What do you think about these NFTs?
Yeah, I mean, NFTs is most people think of them now. I'm not overly interested. You know, so you have like, you know, you have the Bored Ape Yacht Club and all these different NFT communities, and you own basically a NFT on a JPEG. That's not that interesting to me. What is interesting?
Me either.
Is
I don't understand it. You can't touch it, but people are spending a fortune and making a fortune.
But I think that's just the beginning. I think more of it's about this technology, non-fungible tokens, where you can verify your ownership of something. So there's no reason you couldn't begin to attach NFTs to things in the real world, right? You could have an NFT attached to an actual piece of artwork. So right now, if we have a Rembrandt, you've got to have like an authenticator, do all the work, prove
right.
What it is. But what if you had a tag on a Rembrandt and there's an NFT attached to it, and I can track every transaction, every person that's ever bought and sold that photo, I can see. Or you could even do things like you could have it to where that the painter, every time that painting changes hands, you know, that you log it in the blockchain, and whoever the original artist was, would get a certain percentage of the sale, basically a trail
right.
on that into perpetuity. Right. So there's some really fascinating things. You know, what would it look like to begin to use blockchain technology and NFTs and the title transfer market? There are people right now working in the what would it look like for, you know, blockchain technology when it comes to real estate and to be transferring property from one person to the next. So, you know,
right.
you always, anytime you have the first wave of technology, it
right.
often looks kind of weird and fringy. So, you know, you've got all these, like, these weird pictures and things that are NFTs. You're like, that's not interesting. But when you kind of just scratch the surface a little bit and look at what's happening behind the scenes, what I kind of feel is we haven't even begun to imagine the way that NFTs and blockchain technology will change the future.
You know, I've never looked at it that way. You're right, because like blockchain, when they were talking about cryptocurrency years back and stuff, and when I was looking into the blockchain technology, I said, that's really cool technology. It really, for example, would help refugees around the world, right? When people, and that's a good example right now with Ukraine, God bless them, you know, people leaving
yeah.
and taking nothing with them, and how do they prove who they are, right? So the blockchain
yep.
technology, which the cryptocurrency uses and all, you know, that could be where we all have that, our records or however, you know, are safer than like our social security
yeah.
number, right?
Yeah.
So I
exactly.
didn't look at
yeah.
that. NFT, that makes sense. So you're saying we could actually, because I was reading one article where I forgot the gentleman's name. He's really young. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, that he's made millions in the last 2 years with the NFT art, and that Sotheby's actually,
yeah.
he was one of the first that Sotheby let him have an auction with NFTs, and he's made
yeah.
a fortune. And I thought, I'm like, I'm wrapping my brain around.
Is his like artist name is Beeple. His real name
oh,
is.
Oh, you know who it is. Okay,
Michael
yeah, I'm
something.
So sorry. I didn't know
yeah,
the name off
yeah.
the top of my head. But it like blows me away. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm trying to wrap my brain around how does somebody pay for this that's not, they're not, they can't touch it. And then like I heard about someone paying $600,000 for a boat. Well, it's not your boat. So that part, I haven't wrapped my brain around it enough yet, but when you just said that you could attach that NFT to something you have and then keep a record, that makes sense to me, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting.
Well,
very interesting.
So you're starting to see the emergence of, like, even social tokens. So to give you an example,
okay.
You even see this with the Bored Ape Yacht Club. If you hold one of these NFTs, There
right.
are things you can do with it. You can access actual events and actual parties, and you own the intellectual property to this. You could use, if you start your own coffee company, you could put this image on the coffee or on the bags of coffee. And so
I love that.
There are becoming more and more real world uses for these. So, you know, the guys behind Bored Ape Yacht Club have thought about, what if we actually bought an actual yacht club? And the only way you got access to our yacht club is by owning one of these NFTs, right? That's kind of your entry ticket. That's the membership to
okay.
join the club. Well, then if people want to be a part of that club, you're going to have to buy one of the NFTs. There's only a limited number of those NFTs. Well, now my NFT is worth more because everybody wants to be in that club. So then they buy it from me at an increased price. So you're starting to see the same thing happen, though, in this with social tokens. So you have influencers, someone who's famous, will have tokens, and you use those tokens to have access to this famous person. Maybe to, like, be in a group chat with them on a
right.
Discord
right.
or to go to a party with them or whatever it might be. And as that artist or that influencer becomes more famous, their coins, the social tokens, become more valuable because more people want access to it. So let's take, like, you know, we met back in the day through ClickFunnels, right? Went to the ClickFunnels
conference. Yes, yes, yes.
Well,
yep.
You could have the guy who started ClickFunnels is a guy named Russell Brunson, one of the smartest people
Brunson,
I've ever met.
I love him. He's amazing.
So Russell could have his own social token, and you know you
okay.
could cap it. There's 2 million social tokens, and the holders of the social token get to be on a one-hour Zoom call with Russell every week. Well, you know, when he's first starting out, no one really knows who he is. Those social tokens aren't worth anything because who's Russell Brunson? Why do I want to be on a call with
him? So he'd cap it at like 2 million, example. Okay.
You'd cap it at 2 million. And then as time goes on, and you to be on a call, each call you have to use maybe 1,000 tokens or whatever it might be.
Okay.
You can structure it
okay.
yourself. Well, as he becomes
right.
more and more famous as time goes on, there's only ever going to be 2 million Russell Brunson tokens. Well, now everyone wants to know what he has to say. So, and you and I, we got in early. They gave us these social tokens early on. And so now we can take our 1,000 tokens that we paid nothing for, and now we can sell them to somebody else for $20,000 or whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
And so it's an,
that's amazing.
It's a really interesting way to, like, to, you know, in the past, if I was a fan of Russell, I got nothing out of being a fan of Russell and telling all my friends or a new band or whatever it
might
be.
But what if
I actually have kind of an investment in his success? So I'm going to tell everyone
about
ClickFunnels and about Russell, because the more popular he becomes, the more valuable my social token comes. Or the more valuable.
I'd never looked at it that way. That makes so much sense. No, that makes so much sense. I'd never looked, because I was trying to wrap my brain around these NFTs going, okay, I've got to start some of this. I don't know what this is, but you know what I mean? Like, this is wild. But with the way you're saying, it makes sense. It makes much more sense.
Here's the thing. There's going to be a lot of money lost because there's going to be a lot of bad bets. There's also a lot of money made because we don't even understand how this is going to be used. So,
I
tell people if you want exposure, just, you know, spread some money around to different areas, different categories, and you're going to lose some. Some are going to completely fail. That's okay.
But,
you know, there are also going to be ones that take off and can make a massive amount of money.
That's amazing. You know, a lot of people, it seems like a lot of people lost a lot of money through COVID, and a lot of people became very wealthy with COVID, you know? Different spectrums, you know? And it's so important for people to get out there and, like, learn from you, trust you, you know, and really start looking at the whole picture instead of just going day to day and in a job and not planning at all. It just, I think a lot of people, I do see a lot of people that were just kind of getting by day to day, reevaluating their entire life with the last couple of years. So it's been interesting.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Wow. So, Kevin, we're almost at the end of the show. I want people to call, and people, we have your contact information as well, too, if people contact us through our network and anybody else listening. Is there, like, minimums they have to have to work with you, or do they pay, like, an upfront fee to consult with you, or how does it work? I know you're slammed. I know you have lots of clients. I know you probably, I mean, it's difficult to take everybody forever, right? But I know you have a great system and you're really organized with your crew.
Yeah, so we don't have minimums. We charge like an initial planning fee, and that kind of varies depending on the complexity. What we kind of tell people is we want to work with clients who want to work with us for the long term. And so we prefer not like kind of one-off engagements, and people who are committed to building real wealth. We want to be with them on that journey of building wealth. And we make our money, we charge asset under management fee. After that initial onboarding fee, we charge 1% of whatever it is that we are managing. We charge 1% of the assets that we're managing. And as your assets
every year,
grow,
is that how it works?
Grow,
I don't, every year,
yeah,
is that how it works? Or I'm not, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Every year. Yeah, okay. Every year. And so we want to work, you know, we don't have minimums, but we want people who are committed to building wealth. Because as, you know, your wealth increases, our fee that we receive increases. And the reason I like that model is because as you become wealthier and as you age, your life becomes more complex. And so instead of us constantly having to say, like, okay, you need to pay us more because now it's more complicated, it just, as your wealth grows, that fee kind of grows along with it. And you never have, you don't have to write us a check or anything. It just gets billed directly to your account.
I love that.
It's
that really makes a lot
way.
Of sense. Because you need your help. I mean, so when they buy and sell stocks, it's going to be off the whole amount for the year, the profit, right? It's not going to be on each time they buy and sell. I'm just asking a layman question.
Yeah, no, we don't charge them any fees for buying and selling. All that's for free. They just pay that flat fee, asset under management, and there's no other fees for buying or selling or anything.
That's
like
great.
That.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, we don't have front-load fees on, you know, mutual funds or any of the things that used to be in the past. And we really try to, when we're creating a portfolio, try to really focus on minimizing fees, expense ratios, things like that for the clients.
That's fantastic. And if somebody, like, they're just starting out, they really don't have much of a portfolio, it doesn't matter, right? You'll actually work with them and help them, or do they have to be already set?
They just have to be committed to investing. Like I basically, if you're willing to like max out your Roth and things like that every year, we have good tech stack that can do that. And you know, so if you're willing to do that and grow your wealth and want to be a person that grows wealth, then we're willing to work with anyone, because you know, often it will be that young client that comes on that 20 years from now, they're going to be a millionaire. And that Goldman Sachs is going to want to work with them, right? Well, if I work with them when they were young and I helped them build their wealth, then I have a leg up over, you know, these massive firms. They're all going to fight over them at that point because they know me and they trust me. So that's the reason you know, I want people who want to build wealth and want to build, you know, their assets. But if that, you know, as long as that's their goal, I will work with anyone.
That's fantastic. No, I mean, they need to be serious, right? Because right now it's not worth your time consulting somebody and doing anything. Even in my industry, you know, we become experts at what we do, right? And we really want to help people, not just play around with it, right? It's not
they
have to be serious. And everything in life takes commitment, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, everything. You're right.
Everything, you know? Yep, it really does. And that really gives peace in life, too, when you have that commitment. So it's really interesting. Yeah. So this is fantastic. And you can work with anybody in all 50 states in the U.S., or do we have any areas that we can't
work?
No,
so we can work with people anywhere. We have caps. You know, you can only work with a certain number of people in a state until you have to register with that individual state.
Oh, okay.
So there are some states that I am quickly reaching the limit on. I'm registered in D.C. and California, so I can take unlimited clients in those areas. But other states, we're starting to reach caps. But right now, I don't think there's any state we can't work with a client in.
That's fantastic. And you would know. Good. Yeah, this has been great. You're always great. Can you give us your contact information again?
Yeah, no, these are always... Yeah, it's just you can email me, kevin@foundryfinancial.org. You can find me on Twitter, kevinlum@kevinlum. And then our website is just foundryfinancial.org. And on the website, there's a button. You can schedule a free 30-minute call, and we can kind of chat and find out a bit more about your situation.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, things are changing fast, but it's going to all be good. All be good. Our real estate world has been changing. It's been crazy how much people are paying so much more than what properties are worth. You know, it's just amazing to me. But it's happening all over.
It is amazing. And they're like
fighting over these
properties.
I know. And they're like paying like a lot over the appraisal. It's amazing to me. But, you know, I guess we're just seeing it all. And, yeah. So if there's anything else, we're just at the end. I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on, and I want to talk to you soon and get your take. I guess as far as advice right now, what people should do, and they need to talk to you first, because you need to know what their situation is before you offer anything out there, I guess.
Yeah, you know, the thing with financial advice is, you know, people always ask me, what's your opinion on this, that, or the other? And it almost always starts with, well, it depends. And so that's why, you know, it's always good to start with the financial plan and to get a sense of your overall financial life, because what is appropriate and perfect for one person isn't for another person.
Exactly.
As just a general, like, high level, you know, if you're young, stay invested, keep adding to that investment account, and just sit through the ups and the downs, and you're going to be absolutely fine. If you're beginning to, you know, reach retirement age and you have to be more careful with your assets, well, then, you know, you might want to dial it back. But one of the things I actually like doing is dialing back, you know, risk and part of the portfolio going to bonds, but keeping the other half of the portfolio really invested fairly aggressively. And, you know, small cap, value stocks, things are going to do better, and I believe will outperform over the long run. And so, you know, if the stock market completely collapses, you've got a large chunk of, you know, liquid assets that you can then, you know, transfer into buying stocks from the cheap. And if it does well, you're able to capture some of that upside. And so, you know, that's what if it was me, that's what I would do, is I begin to move towards retirement.
I love it. I love it. That's great. Do you think people should also, we're at the end here, just that they should mix in their whole life insurance? I was always a believer of term insurance when I was young and spent a lot of money many years investing in term, paying for term so that I would have the highest amount for my son and my family and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, because I remember A.L. Williams in the late 80s, like, buy term, invest the rest, you know? And then now
yep.
you see a lot of situations where whole life is kind of blending and they're switching things where you can mix it in and then have some monies. What's your take on insurance? I know I'm just asking you quickly, not trying to get all into a deep
yeah.
time. We only have a couple of minutes, but.
As a general rule for most people, I still recommend term insurance. And I think
okay.
that, buy term, invest the rest is a really great advice. I ran numbers for a young client who had a term policy, then a whole life policy. And I basically showed him how if he, just bought a term policy, he'd have double the coverage. And if he takes
right.
the extra amount that he was putting into the whole life policy and invest that, he will end up having way more than his face value at, in 20 or 30
right.
years. And during that
That's
20 to
think.
30 year period, he's going to have much better coverage. Now,
right.
there are cases for really high net worth individuals where there are some places where a permanent policy is really, can be a smart
investment.
Because
they have the money to just buy it and do it right. I got right. That makes sense.
Exactly. But for most people, particularly if you're younger, I tend to just recommend just buying a term policy.
That's great. Yeah, it goes by awfully fast. It just goes by really fast.
I love compound
interest. I think compound interest should be taught in first grade. I don't remember being taught compound interest at all through school, although through the 12 first, through regular school. I don't remember
yeah.
being taught anything
yeah.
about compound interest. And it's like I was kicking myself when I got older, thinking, why didn't they teach us about compound interest? Oh, my God. It's amazing what you can do, right?
It is amazing. It is amazing. It is the eighth wonder of the world, I think. It really is.
I like that. I love it. It's so true. Well, gosh, Kevin, I want to keep in touch and have you back and I'm so thrilled. I'm so happy to talk with you today.
Yeah, I would love to be back anytime. I always love being on your show and getting to talk with you.
You're great. You're wonderful. Well, thanks for all you do and all the people you're taking care of and helping, and we'll put it out there too. And it's just, we'll have peace in this world, right? I know you're one of those
yes,
people that
yes,
puts
yes.
that peace and love out there. You're not, and it's just such a pleasure to know you. And
you as well, and I always enjoy our conversations, and I look forward to talking again soon.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Peace. Bye.
Bye.
See you.